effect of these two were 50-50, but about me, it was 30-70. You know what?
What was 30-70?
The effect of these two factors,
okay,
for example.
Okay. You think...
Yeah, I mean, this is the meaning of balanced combination that I'm talking about.
Not balanced. 70-30 is not balanced.
It is.
How is that balanced? 50-50 is balanced.
No, it's equal. There is a difference between these two words.
Balance and equality. Come on, you're throwing in equality.
No. I'm not going to go through this topic at all. I hate it. Oh. But I'm going to tell you that, okay, by balanced, I mean, again, this situation, we choose the percentage of the effect, you know what? And okay. I'm going to tell you that, okay, I do agree with the point that the root of who you are is environment somehow.
Okay. Right, but, okay, me as a person, right? Okay, I think I'm going to get into a complicated, like, philosophical discussion mm-hmm. now. So hold your breath. We're going to go for a break.
Yeah, I do agree with that one. So
come on. Sorry, you open the show.
Yeah, I am okay. The host. So dear listeners, I think we're going to go for a break. Then we're going to come back and talk about this beautiful topic more.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are here talking about the same old story of genes and environment, about who you are.
Right. So, okay. I'm going to throw in a question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there are people around, our listeners also, there are certain people who've got a background in medicine or medical studies. As you have, do I choose my genes? Right, I don't. Is there any way for me to, in any manner, choose or amplify certain things in my genes that I have?
Actually, in scientific areas, there are ways to change genes. You know,
change
them. Yeah, I mean,
once you've been born.
Yeah, once you're
like after
born,
birth, I can choose my genes now. Like I can become a Viking or something, right?
No, not in that way. Actually, we're gonna go through this because of some medical diseases. You know, if we're changing these genetical diseases, we're gonna go through this area that we want to change genes. But you know, always humans are curious about something else. We are gonna go through this project for diseases, and they're gonna go for something interesting. For example, changing the color of your eye or some fantasy. Or something.
No, but
like
that's not going to happen.
That will happen.
Okay, explain to me.
I don't want to make this conversation that much professional about this matter.
No. Just the fact that you said some people can scientists can change genes. It means like, does that mean once I've been born I can change it?
Yes. It means that.
Like I can change the color of my eyes after I've been born.
Yes, you can replace.
Like naturally.
Yeah, naturally. They
nice.
Are searching about these things, but.
I'm going to get golden eyes.
But, you know, I think this is not a matter because always okay. We're going to go through something that we shouldn't. Because here we're going to talk about diseases and they're like, okay, we're going to change the color of your hair. It's more beautiful. No, science is here to help you, not to just change you in a way.
Yeah, but
want,
like
you know
changing
what?
My hair to golden might help me, man.
But the thing is, actually, you cannot choose your genes, but you cannot even choose your environment whenever you're born.
Oh, so that's where you're headed. Okay, yeah. I get you. Okay. Now I know. I get why you were like softening up the sand and like trying to construct it. All right. So that's what you mean. Like you might be able to change. Okay, all right, I might. Okay, you said you might be able to you might be able to change your genes, but not the environment. Is that what you said?
No, at all.
Okay,
after
no
you
dead
grow
end,
up,
then.
After you grow older, you can change your environment, actually.
Okay,
maybe
you can change,
we have many verses in Quran that tells you if you're not satisfied with where you are, you have to immigrate.
Right. No, it's funny that you talk about, it's not funny, but like, it's you know what I mean, listeners, come on, man. Yeah, that you talk about the Quran, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is Allah's doing, isn't it? Me having a certain gene, right? Okay. Or, fair enough, my granddad or my great-granddad chose my great-grandmum or my great-grandmum chose my great-granddad, mm-hmm. whatever it was, that had an involvement. But now I am in a situation because of their choices, right? Had nothing to do with me. Now, I have a tendency, because my, right, not me. Okay, Mr. X, his dad was a thief, okay. Right? And his granddad was a thief, and his aunt was a thief, and his great-great-great-granddad was a thief, right?
Okay.
And now this guy, he wants to steal all the time. He wants to be a thief, you understand what I'm saying?
Even there is a desire to be a thief in that person?
Yeah, because, like, he, right, yeah,
I can't
man.
Understand it.
Yeah,
it's
isn't
not
that genetic, like, to be a thief?
Human, because of their grandparents and grandparents, you know, they were a thief. There is a desire in that person,
yeah.
And it is just inheriting through the genes.
I have no
this
idea.
This is not rational.
No. Why not? No, not genes, but he's been grown up seeing that. Like, he saw his granddad being a thief.
It.
He saw his
so,
coming back
know,
to the environment,
he
right?
Didn't, maybe he didn't see his grandparents or something, that you were telling me that, okay. Only the parents here, I think.
Right, so it was Mr. X, like, not me.
Okay.
But
Mr. X here is not a thief. So, I mean, what is...
No, I'm saying, what's his
or
fault?
Or is a thief?
No. This kid, mm-hmm. right, he has this intrinsic desire to steal because of
his
parents. You know, like, whatever the reason,
so
right?
So it's environment.
It is environment.
Not,
yeah. No, but, like, is it, for example, aren't certain
you know what,
tendencies
I think?
Transferred through mm-hmm. your genes? Like, you know, stealing.
You know what? I think your explanation of environment and genes are somewhat different with me, and this is the problem that we have together in this discussion. You know what? You were telling me that their grandparents or parents and was like that, and you were telling me it's not environment. What does that mean?
No, I'm not saying it's not environment. I'm saying, is it that kid's fault, though?
You know
that's
what?
My problem. It's not about, like, was it genetic or environmental. But then that kid is now there. He's in that situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he is.
Now, is it his
I cannot
fault?
Change it, even.
At that stage, no. Maybe, like, 10 years
maybe
later.
Maybe later, yeah.
But right now, is that his fault? Like, God has put him, Allah has put him in that family.
Maybe
right?
This is an examination, you know. So you were telling me that the situation of that four-year-old kid was somehow difficult, that, for example, a four-year-old kid cannot decide what to do, what not to do, and to steal something and how to handle this desire to steal things, you know.
Mm.
But the thing I want to tell you that at last, no matter in what age, there is a day that you will become mature. And when you become mature, you can decide. And this decision comes from your mind. So first of all, you have to find your guidelines. You have to find the way you are going to live in this world, and then according to the guidelines you have, especially religious guidelines, you know what? Especially
interesting. Imam Ali alayhi salam, mm-hmm. is very famous. I'm sure people have heard before that he says, "Learn your religion rather than
exactly
you're right. So, like, even that actually is true for your lifestyle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because religion means lifestyle. I think most of the time,
it's lifestyle. Yeah, so. Rather than having that certain lifestyle, way of life that your parents, your granddad, or your childhood was, right?
Yeah.
Learning it is the key,
is the more
right?
important. Is more important than the yeah. other parts. And I'm going to tell you that, dear listeners, no matter who you are, no matter where you were born, no matter which parents you had, and whatever their IQ, their, I don't know, career or something, you are the one who would choose to be whatever you want to be. And you have the ability to change the world. So first change yourself in a way you want.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'm just telling you that first you have to grow your brain.
Grow your brain.
We've talked about the same older story of genes and situation, and we came to this conclusion that no matter which genes you have or what kind of situation you were born in, you can change it and you can be the one you have to be in this world. Do you agree with me?
Take control.
Exactly. Take control of your life. And you are the writer and the author of the story of your life. Just write it in a way you have to write. So I wish you've enjoyed the conversation of today.
In all truth, my coffee is getting cold, so I want to finish it. Please join us next time when my coffee is hotter.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. If you remember, we briefly discussed Imam Khomeini's return from Paris to Tehran. Imam Khomeini's return to Iran accelerated the speed of events so much so that within 10 days after his glorious return, the Islamic Revolution reached its ultimate victory and 2,500 years tyranny was cast for good into the dustbin of history. Just one day before the victory, the regime's last premier, Bakhtiar, announced martial law. But Imam Khomeini ordered the people to pay no attention to the martial law and pour to the streets. This command was the last nail in the coffin of the regime, and the Islamic Revolution triumphed on February 12, 1979. Imam Khomeini's decision on paying no attention to Bakhtiar's martial law was considered impossible by many scholars and even his near companions. They told the Imam that the decision would result in bloodbath on the streets. However, Imam Khomeini has always put his trust in God and through intercession with Imam Mahdi issued the order. Less than 3 weeks after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini decided to leave Tehran for Qom to supervise the administration of affairs from that holy city while engagement in teaching religious students at seminary. He had decided not to disclose the issue, yet it was disclosed soon. The Imam's daughter, Ms. Zahra Mustafavi, describes the Imam's sojourn at her home. That night, the Imam slept at our home. The next morning, he started walking for 20 minutes in the yard, as it was his habit. I was walking with him too. Our house was adjacent to a two-floor girls' school. While we were walking in the yard, one of the students had seen and recognized the Imam. The news was soon spread across the street and the neighborhood. Very soon, people swarmed on the street to visit the Imam. The next morning, Imam Khomeini left his daughter for Qom. Imam Khomeini arrived in Qom on March 3, 1979, among the fervent people who had gathered to welcome him. The Imam delivered a short speech at Imam Hassan Askari Mosque and went to the house which had been decided for his residence. 2 days later, his wife, Ms. Khadija Saghafi, joined him with some necessary home appliances. During the Imam's residence in Qom, many people from the city and across the country would come to visit him, and Imam Khomeini would go to the roof of the house to answer their pure sentiments. Imam Khomeini had to go up several steps to the roof, and this was worrying as he was around 80 years old. Ms. Saghafi's brother speaks on his sister's concern over the issue. I realize from the behavior of my sister and her remarks that she was concerned about the Imam's frequent commutation to the roof to meet the people. She tried to reduce the commutations because she knew that they were harmful for the Imam at that age. But Imam Khomeini's strong love for the people and his good manners required doing this as much as he could. Later on, when the Imam got heart problem, doctors said that it was the result of his repeated going up and down the steps. Imam Khomeini's wife would try to convince him to reduce his going up and down the steps, but she was not successful. Ms. Saghafi would tell Imam Khomeini that many of the people who express warm sentiments on the street might not be his lovers, and they might be ill-wishers who wanted to exploit the sentiments of masses. The Imam would answer, "Yes, some of these people may be such, but most of them who gather on the streets and alleys are the downtrodden and barefooted people of society, who will abandon us if we do not appreciate them. What is important for us is not to forget ourselves and not be boastful of this popular bounty, or else we will both lose them and be the losers of the field of divine obligation." Imam Khomeini's wife would receive many guests during her stay in Qom with the Imam. Thousands of ladies were eager to meet the lady. Relatives, old friends, and acquaintances from Tehran, Qom, Mahallat, and Khomein, the ladies from the houses of the sources of emulations and great ulema in Qom, the wives of the officials and women and girls working at different organs, and ladies from all over Iran would come to Qom to visit the Imam's wife, and she would receive them warmly, even if they had come with no early informing. Imam Khomeini and his wife stayed in Qom for 9 months. Dear listeners, we will speak about the events during this period in the next episode.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, breaking the contract and its consequences. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the breaking the contract or promise and its consequences in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Quran or the Islamic teachings, we see that Islam has emphasized on fulfilling and being faithful to the promise. What happens when if someone breaks the promise or the covenant and he does not fulfill it? Therefore, Islam has also conveyed the message that there are some consequences that will happen. From them, it is said in the Quran that فَمَن نَكَسَ فَأَنَّمَا يَنْكُثُ عَلَىٰ نَفْسِهِ, which is that whoever breaks the promise or a contract with someone, therefore he has broken his own personality. He has broken his personality or his self, which means that the damage that the person will see in breaking a covenant is only for himself, and it does not bring any consequences for the others. Why it is so? It is because when we fulfill the covenant, when we fulfill a promise, when we are faithful to it, obviously it builds a trust amongst the people. We become someone who is trustworthy, who is truthful, which are the characteristics of the Prophet as well, the prophets as well. Even when we see that in the life of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, before he announces his prophethood or being prophet, he was known as the trustworthy person, as a truthful person. He was known as Sadiq and Amin, which shows that even when people never knew that he is a prophet, when he was living amongst the people as an ordinary person, he was known as the most trustworthy and most truthful person in the society. And if someone breaks the covenant, obviously he cannot reach to this destination or to this status. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of breaking the contract of promise and its consequences. We said that when someone breaks his promise or contract, obviously the first consequence that he sees is that he becomes a person who is not trustworthy, and no one trusts that person. Now, this person in the society is just like a person whom neither the friends trust nor the enemies. We have seen many examples in the history, many examples in the history where, for example, when an enemy wanted to attack a country or a place, they put some dispute among the people of that country because they couldn't invade. And when some of those people who were defending their country, they basically betrayed or they broke their promise with the others, and they allowed the enemies to win the war, the enemies have come and they have killed all of them. Why? Because they said that we cannot trust them because they fulfilled their promises. They were never faithful to their brothers. Then how can they be faithful to us? Therefore, these are the lessons that we can even learn from the history. There are many other examples in the history. Therefore, the one who is not faithful, obviously, he is the one who is not faithful to the promises that he made. He cannot be trusted even amongst the family. The family will not trust such a person. The society, neighbors will never trust such a person. The friends will never trust such a person. Therefore, he cannot get a status, a good position, maybe a good job. Why? Because he is someone who never fulfills the promise. He breaks his promises and covenant. Even the being punctual at the work, it is one of the faithfulness to the promise, that I promise that I will come to the work on time. But if someone does not reach that time, obviously after some time he will lose his job because they cannot trust him. He has promised to be on time. These are the consequences, basically. When a person is not trustworthy, when a person is not faithful to the contract and the promises, obviously he has to face all these consequences. And at the end, according to the saying of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the hellfire is waiting for such a person. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
British Prime Minister Liz Truss finally resigned, as experts had predicted her collapse days and even weeks before. Liz Truss's legacy for Britain was a tanking pound, soaring inflation, and a seemingly inevitably recession. World media websites have analyzed this issue and the economic challenges that face Britain. Stay tuned for the second part, please. UK Prime Minister Liz Truss announced her resignation after 6 disastrous weeks in office, during which her tax plan panicked the markets and her only party turned on her. She will be the shortest-serving prime minister in the UK history. That's a remarkably short time tell-bell for Conservative members of Parliament to pick their 5th prime minister since 2016 Brexit referendum left the party deeply divided. Truss will remain in office in the interim. The Times of London and Daily Telegraph both report that Truss's predecessor, Boris Johnson, is expected to throw his hat in the ring just 3 months after resigning over a series of scandals. It's unclear if Johnson would be able to get enough parliamentary colleagues to support him. Leaders around the world reacted to Truss's resignation announcement, with President Biden saying it did not change the two countries' enduring relationship. The announcement, 45 days after taking office, followed a tumultuous day in which Home Secretary Suella Braverman resigned and several senior Conservatives called on Truss to do the same. This whole affair inexcusable. It is a pitiful reflection on the Conservative parliamentary party on every level, and it reflects very badly, obviously, on the government of the day. Senior Conservative MP Charles Walker fumed to the BBC. Walker was speaking in the wake of a chaotic vote over fracking, which Truss supports, but many Conservative MPs oppose. With Truss's lieutenants desperately pressing MPs to vote with the government, a chaotic scene played out in which the chief whip reportedly announced she was resigning and Truss left the chamber to chase after her, causing both to miss the vote. That episode seemed to sum up Truss' short tenure. The website of Axios continued, the market panic had already forced Truss to fire her finance minister, a close ideological ally, and replace him with a more centrist figure in Jeremy Hunt. Hunt will be among the potential consensus picks to replace Truss, along with Rishi Sunak, who finished second to Truss in the leadership race, but correctly warned of the economic dangers of her tax cut plans. Other potential successors include Defense Minister Ben Wallace or House of Commons Leader Penny Mordaunt, though hardline Brexiteers like Brave men may also throw their hats in the ring. Truss won the intra-party race to replace Boris Johnson by promising bold tax cuts, including for the rich, in order to boost economic growth. Truss dismissed claims that such a plan was highly risky given rising inflation and the UK's stretched fiscal circumstances, as Project Fear from the Anti-Growth Coalition. In fact, she announced the tax cut alongside massively expensive energy subsidies. That spooked the market so badly that the Bank of England staged an emergency intervention to ease a run on the pound. Unable to steady situation, Truss took the humiliating step of handing economic policy over to Hunt. The situation further made clear that in jittery times like these, previously little-known risks in the financial system can bubble up seemingly from nowhere, with seismic economic and political consequences. Approval ratings for Truss and the Conservatives fell even faster than the pound. Polls now consistently put the Conservatives more than 30 points behind Labour. Remarkably, one new poll out this week finds that just 21% of 2019 Conservative voters would prefer Truss as Prime Minister to Labour leader Keir Starmer. There was anger toward Boris Johnson. With Liz Truss, it's more despair. People think she is not up to the job, says James Johnson, whose firm JL Partners has been conducting focus groups on Truss. No election is due for 2 years, but many Conservatives are already expecting to lose power for the first time since 2010, possibly in landslide. A lot of people have essentially already given up, Johnson says. Truss is eligible for a taxpayer-funded allowance of $129,000 annually for the rest of her life. The costs are a reimbursement of incurred expenses for necessary office costs and a secretarial cost arising from their special position in public life, per the government's website. A post-Brexit identity crisis has led the UK to what will be its fifth prime minister since the 2016 referendum.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood
قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Divine leaders must, before anyone else, like trailblazers with the banner in their hands, set out on the path, stand tall and lead the way for others to follow. Prophet Ibrahim says, I am the first to submit. The Quran, Surah 6, verse 163. Before anyone or anything else, he says he is the first to humble himself before his Lord. This is the quality of divine leaders. Divine leaders must be like this, and they are like this. The Prophet was present for all the most important and most dangerous events at the advent of Islam. True, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud was beaten, Khabbab was tortured, and Ammar was tortured as well. But the persecution the Prophet suffered was no less than any of these. In fact, if you compare the situation of these devoted companions to the Prophet himself, you will see the Prophet's task was even more difficult and trying, because as their leader, he was always at the forefront. Faith is one of the most important qualities we find in God's messengers.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Here, faith means to believe in what you say with all of your being. The mark of their faith is that they themselves, before anyone else, set out on the path. That is why the Quran tells us, the messenger has faith in what has been sent down to him from his Lord and all the faithful. The Quran, Surah 2, verse 285. The faithful, those who have been converted by him, those outstanding people who have joined him and are now the loudspeakers for his message, are like him as well. Each has faith in Allah. Each and every one of them believed in Allah. They accepted Allah with all of their being, His angels, His scriptures, the holy books which are from the first to the last in harmony with one another, and His messengers and all of His prophets. The Prophet and his followers believe in all of the prophets because all follow the same path. In this path, the prophets are like camel drivers, guiding the caravan along the way. This was a verse from Sheikh Mahmoud Shabistari's poetry. The prophets are all drivers of a single caravan, guiding the caravan on a single path, leading it to a single destination, with people from all places, all going together towards a single terminus.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the World with Reporters.
EU leaders at a summit in Brussels agreed China is becoming too assertive. It's the same phrase they have been using for years with respect to Russia. Iran was also in their sights. New restrictive measures against Tehran were rubber stamped.
Sanctions have been taken against those who are participating in the repression of peaceful demonstrations. And this, of course, is linked to the support of Russia against Ukraine.
Analysts say the allegations against Iran are spurious and they are being vehemently contested. It's pointed out that the bloc sometimes ignores clear international law violations, even when there's zero ambiguity. For example, those perpetrated by Israel against Palestinians. The US is set to have even greater influence over the EU as the bloc moves to try and isolate Moscow and Beijing. It's suggested that has been Washington's plan all along.
Europe, they are totally dependent on the United States and in energy field and in military field. And that is dependency that doesn't allow them to conduct independent foreign policies.
Sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have driven energy costs to unmanageable levels. A complex package has been agreed in principle by EU leaders to try and lower prices and demand.
There's a lot of work now ahead of us what the energy is concerned, but the roadmap is very clear. And it was good to have this unanimity, this broad support for the roadmap that we have put forward.
Leaders admit the energy package is very complex and will take up to 3 weeks to try and finalise. Will this summit deliver positive results for EU citizens? It's a crucial question for millions of households and businesses, but also a vital political question for the bloc's leaders. Extreme left and extreme right anti-EU parties are waiting in the wings. Ignoring massive corruption findings by their own financial watchdog, EU leaders have agreed to provide €18 billion to the Ukrainian government in 2023. But that's nothing compared to what they will spend on lethal weapons for the country's army. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. Nowtown is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalalip from Kish Island.
On Saturday, 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni took an oath as Italy's prime minister before President Sergio Mattarella. Meloni, the country's first woman to become premier, is one of the founders and the current leader of the far-right-leaning party Brothers of Italy, the political force that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in last month's general election. Besides bringing some political stability to Italy, which has seen 68 governments in its 74 years of history as a republic, Meloni will have to face a series of daunting challenges, including a looming recession, protecting Italians from surging energy bills, and reassuring the establishment about her Atlanticist and anti-Putin alignment.
Delegates from our coalition met with President Mattarella, and they agreed over the fact that there are many emergencies at national and international level, and quick answers are needed.
Italy's new Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, says her government will follow the line of NATO and the Western Alliance. Also, the new foreign minister, former European Parliament President Antonio Tajani, has repeatedly said he will be fully supportive of Kiev. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and Matteo Salvini, are longtime admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Earlier this week, a video portraying Berlusconi saying that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky should be held accountable for the conflict in Ukraine caused a stir in the political arena. Italians are hoping the new government will work for a peaceful resolution to the conflict in Ukraine.
We must do all we can to stop the war through negotiations and dialogue, and the new government must help Italians to pay energy bills. We are on our knees.
We are confident that the new government will do good. Its biggest challenge will be easing the impact of soaring energy bills on Italians.
Meloni is expected to lay out her political priorities next week when she faces confidence votes at the parliament that will confirm or not that she holds a majority. Max Civili, Rome.
A refugee camp somewhere in the Luhansk region of Donbass. The civilians here are Russian speakers who fled recent Ukrainian advances not far to the west.
Now, the people here won't speak to me on camera. They are simply too scared. I've also been told not to give the exact location of this site or even the town that we're in fear that the Ukrainians might target the center with artillery strikes.
This woman, sobbing into her hands, tells me she has family in Ukrainian territory. They also tell me that they are scared to be put on Telegram channels like this, called Collaborators of Luhansk. It posts the photos and details of anyone accused of working with the Russians. It includes teachers and nurses. Along the battle lines, pro-Ukrainians generally flee west, pro-Russians flee east. The ethnic boundaries of this once mixed country are being defined more clearly.
While this is a proxy war between Russia and NATO, it is also, at its root, a civil war between Ukrainian nationalists and its Russian-speaking minority, who are mainly situated in the east and the south of the country. The fact of the matter is, there is a strong likelihood, even a probability, that if Ukraine was to ever take back these four regions, there would be ethnic cleansing of the Russian-speaking population. The people here in Donbass say that this attempted ethnic cleansing by the Ukrainian army has been going on for the last 8 years.
While Russia and NATO continue to pursue their objectives on the battlefield, there is increasingly a peace to be made and new borders drawn if the views of the people living here were listened to. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
People from all walks of life rallied in the Gaza Strip following the Friday prayer in solidarity with Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters shouted slogans decrying the Israeli crimes in Al-Quds and in the occupied West Bank. In recent days, extremist Jewish settlers, backed by Israeli forces, have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Israeli attacks usually increase during Jewish holidays. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the rally, warned the Tel Aviv regime against crossing the red lines at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound.
Armed resistance is the only choice for Palestinians to fight the occupation. The Zionist enemy is playing with fire by attacking Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Palestinian resistance in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds is growing stronger. The Zionists are adding fuel to the fire and it may only burn them.
Protesters in the Gaza Strip vowed to step up their support for Al-Quds until the end of all the Israeli violations in the Holy City. They also reiterated their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds.
We call on all Muslims to defend Al-Aqsa Mosque because it belongs to all Muslims. We call on our brothers and sisters in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds to increase armed resistance against the Zionist enemy. The whole world must understand that we are willing to sacrifice our lives for the sake of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Al-Aqsa Mosque is Islam's third holiest site and has been under Israeli occupation since 1967, while Palestinians consider Al-Quds as the capital of their future state.
We are here today to condemn the continued Israeli attacks against our people in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The Palestinians are fighting for a just cause, and they will continue to fight until they regain their freedom.
Palestinians maintain that continued Israeli infringements upon Al-Aqsa Mosque will only increase the resistance against the occupation.
Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds while turning a blind eye to Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
It's been just a few weeks since the now resigned Prime Minister, Liz Truss, promised low taxes and high growth. Events have moved incredibly fast in Westminster, that a new finance minister is now raising taxes and promising public sector cuts. The U-turns and counter-U-turns have come with a cost for the economy and the people. A new study has found that millions of households are skipping meals or struggling to put healthy foods on the table. Inflation is already at more than 10%. Energy and fuel prices are on the rise, putting a squeeze on Britain's finances.
Well, the start of all this is Brexit. Brexit led to Boris and incompetence. It led to falling living standards. It led to Liz Truss and further incompetence. And Britain basically voted to become poorer by leaving the EU. You can blame some of it on money printing at the Bank of England, inflation taking out, you know, and lowering living standards as well. So it's a combination of things.
A combination of things that have toppled two prime ministers in the span of 1 year.
It's been less than 2 months since Boris Johnson gave way to Liz Truss as prime minister, followed by the death of the Queen and a dramatic change in the country's economic outlook. And now, yet another leadership contest that could trigger even more economic and political instability.
And more instability means more people relying on charities, from food banks to keep their stomachs full, and warm rooms where those unable to heat their homes can take refuge in the cold months of winter. The new chancellor has curbed Liz Truss's flagship economic plan of a 2-year cap on energy bills to April next year. And at the end of this month, he's expected to announce a midterm economic policy that could spell out the beginning of another prolonged period of austerity.
Whoever takes over, Boris, Rishi, Mordaunt, who knows? But the outlook continues to be bad because inflation is still out of control. There's not the money or the government finances to give the public sector further wage rises to match that inflation. Strikes will continue. The fiscal position of the country remains dire, partly because we have a smaller economy because of Brexit. So there's no easy solution. There's no easy way out of this. The hole has been dug and it's very deep and very difficult to climb out of.
Paying the price of that, ordinary Britons, as the Conservative Party races to choose its third leader and prime minister in 1 year, urgent help to those in need couldn't come any sooner. Saeed Purisa, London.
EU leaders at a summit in Brussels agreed China is becoming too assertive. It's the same phrase they have been using for years with respect to Russia. Iran was also in their sights. New restrictive measures against Tehran were rubber stamped.
Sanctions have been taken against those who are participating in the repression of peaceful demonstrations. And this, of course, is linked to the support of Russia against Ukraine.
Analysts say the allegations against Iran are spurious and they are being vehemently contested. It's pointed out that the bloc sometimes ignores clear international law violations, even when there's zero ambiguity, for example, those perpetrated by Israel against Palestinians. The US is said to have even greater influence over the EU as the bloc moves to try and isolate Moscow and Beijing. It's suggested that has been Washington's plan all along.
Europe, they are totally dependent on the United States and in energy field and in military field. And that is dependency that doesn't allow them to conduct independent foreign policies.
Sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have driven energy costs to unmanageable levels. A complex package has been agreed in principle by EU leaders to try and lower prices and demand.
There's a lot of work now ahead of us what the energy is concerned, but the roadmap is very clear. And it was good to have this unanimity, this broad support for the roadmap that we have put forward.
Leaders admit the energy package is very complex and will take up to 3 weeks to try and finalise. Will this summit deliver positive results for EU citizens? It's a crucial question for millions of households and businesses, but also a vital political question for the bloc's leaders. Extreme left and extreme right anti-EU parties are waiting in the wings. Ignoring massive corruption findings by their own financial watchdog, EU leaders have agreed to provide 18 billion euro to the Ukrainian government in 2023. But that's nothing compared to what they will spend on lethal weapons for the country's army. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A draft law aiming to punish anyone caught wearing a full face covering has been proposed in Switzerland. If passed, Muslim women caught wearing a niqab or a burqa could be fined up to $1,000. A far-right proposal to totally ban facial coverings in public has already become law, winning a narrow victory in a referendum in 2021.
The ban was pushed by the Swiss People's Party, with one of its parliamentarians arguing that the ban would promote equality between men and women and would also help to fight back against so-called Islamic radicalization.
Muslim organizations have expressed concern over rising Islamophobia in Switzerland and condemned the move as hypocritical.
So the Swiss cabinet says that this general ban on face covering is about the safety and safeguarding of citizens. But why not make an exemption for the niqab? I mean, it's not like there's a crime spree of niqabis across the country. That's just ridiculous. And, you know, jokes aside, what is going on here with vilifying a well-known symbol of the Muslim faith is that Muslims would then, as a community, be seen as divisive and criminally minded if we so much as speak up in support of the niqab.
Laws which negatively affect Muslim women are springing up across Europe. France banned wearing full-face veils in public in 2011, whilst Denmark, Austria, the Netherlands and Bulgaria have full or partial bans on wearing face coverings. Muslims make up only around 5% of the Swiss population, yet how Muslim women choose to dress remains a major obsession of right-wing lawmakers. Robert Carter, London.
Another Palestinian young man, seen by many as a hero and an icon, has been killed by Israeli forces during a confrontation in the occupied West Bank. For more than 10 days, the regime's forces had been carrying out a manhunt for Uday Tamimi after he shot at an Israeli military checkpoint at the entrance to his hometown, the Shafat refugee camp in Al-Quds. On Wednesday night, he was gunned down during clashes with Israeli forces at the entrance of an illegal settlement in eastern Al-Quds called Ma'ale Adumim. Hearing a call from Palestinian factions, a general strike has been held in Al-Quds and throughout the occupied West Bank to mourn at Tamimi. The walkout affected all public institutions and private sectors, including schools and businesses. Public transportation was also shut down during the strike.
الإضراب الذي يعم اليوم الأراضي الفلسطينية